shapeshifters.
So Jethro Braun and Brett Horwitz are the co-founders of Zhang Chocolate. Have you seen Zhang Chocolate? It's quite distinctive. The milk chocolate is in sort of an FNB bluey wrapping with a skull, an Aztec-looking skull on it. And then the dark caffeinated chocolate, the dark version of the Zhang Chocolate, is in a more dangerous red wrapping. And the idea of taking something that is perfectly good the way it is, as in a bar of chocolate, it's full of satisfying fat, it's full of satisfying sugar, and that's not enough. You then throw the equivalent of a coffee cup full of caffeine into the mix, and then you sell it at retail outlets. You're asking for trouble. But if you hit that mid-afternoon slump, as so many of us do, if you're not sleeping or eating properly for whatever reason, and you want to have a bar of chocolate and you want to get that little extra kick, these guys seem to have found a sweet spot, literally. Jethro, why did you guys take this fat-laden, sugar-laden snack and then throw caffeine into it?
Well, look, I mean, we wanted to create something that was an alternative to energy drinks. So, I mean, the concept came to us in 2013 whilst we were actually watching an episode of Dragon's Den. Well, the Canadian version is called Shark Tank. So It was like a brief little snippet that came up, and we saw caffeine and chocolate, and we were like, wow. This is the coolest thing we've ever heard of. So, Bretton.
Okay, pause there. Pause there because I want to sort of work up to the great crescendo. So, inspired by an innovation elsewhere and then localizing it. But you guys, Brett, have done a business together. You met at UCT. Your buddies from UCT.
Yes.
You've run a business together before. What was that?
We were in the promotional printing space while we were still studying.
What is promotional printing for the uninitiated?
Sort of t-shirts, mugs, any sort of printing format. You would come to us and we would put your brand on the t-shirt or, you know, the basics.
A lot of people do that, and it's quite a low barrier to entry. You can almost go to any print shop and get 100 of your own made if you're of a mind to do so. So I'm taking it didn't work out.
Yeah, well, the thing is we realized that the market was very saturated, you know, that also, you know, we lost a sort of passion. We wanted to create something that belongs to us, and that's really, you know, we decided to then, you know, look for other options.
Okay, we'll get to those other options in just a moment. What did you do, a business studies course at UC? What were you doing?
I did a BSc in property studies.
And I did a business science marketing at UCT. Yeah.
All right. I mean, so again, you're in the businessy sort of space, and you start this business, you run it for a while, but you lose your mojo for the business. And do you shut it down, or do you run it down? Do you sell it? What do you do with the printing business?
Well, I guess with the printing business, as soon as Zhang came about, we kind of parked the printing business, and we decided to follow this idea.
Okay, so short attention spans. Is that what you're telling us?
We still use a lot of what we learned, you know, the basics of what we learned about how to run a business. Mm. And, you know, even, I mean, the t-shirts that we're wearing today, we printed ourselves. So, you know, we use skills that we've developed from that past business.
Which I think is such, for so many people who are starting out, and especially for guys who go from university and you go, right, I don't want to work for somebody. I actually want to start my own business. Mm. The first business isn't necessarily the business you're going to do for the rest of your life. And it doesn't really matter what you do, provided that you do it with a level of commitment and with your brain engaged, right?
For sure, yeah. Yeah.
Look, my first business was actually a DJ business.
Who else had a DJ business? There was somebody who's done it remarkably well. Yeah. Who started out as a DJ. I can't remember now, but DJ business. I mean, and that again is nice and easy to do nowadays. You got lots of music on a computer. You get an amp and you get some big speakers and
exactly.
You got yourself a business.
Yeah, mine was pretty much mobile setup. Go to functions, do the functions, and I started that business when I was in grade 8. And it was a very successful business.
What triggered this desire to actually run a business, other than you didn't get enough pocket money as a kid?
I just wanted to be the cool DJ at a party, and that's kind of what sparked that business. I've always had this
self-interest at heart.
Exactly. I've always just had this entrepreneurial spirit that I've kind of wanted to create, develop, and just do my own thing.
Mm. So the DJ business was the first one.
Yes.
And Brett, I mean, did you have the same energy flowing through your veins?
So, yeah, I mean, I did a lot of tutoring when I was still at varsity. So
that's not a business. You get paid an hourly rate to take terrified students and indoctrinate them and meet girls.
For sure. But you still, I mean, there's still principles that you learn along the way. And, you know,
Oh, right. Now, take me through the how you watch an episode of Shark Tank, the Canadian version of Dragon's Den. And in a moment, the light comes on. You go, actually, this is something we agree on. This is something that we can run. How does it go from there?
So it was the concept that really struck out for me. The caffeine in chocolate, because I'd never heard of it before, and it's pretty much combining two of mankind's favorite things into one. So Brett and I just did some R&D. We were emailing the guys overseas because the whole idea in the beginning was to actually import the product to South Africa. Subsequent to that, one of our family friends, Roy Fine, heard about what we were doing, and he decided, he was interested in it and said, why don't you guys go overseas to Canada to go meet these guys? So he sponsored us some tickets, and this was last year UCT. We were just about to write exams, and we took a quick 4-day trip to Canada. And we met these guys, and they were awesome guys, and they introduced us to the product. And it just worked out that it was too expensive to import to SA, and the brand really wasn't what we were looking for. We wanted something a bit more edgy.
What was the brand?
It had an owl on it. It was a bit granola Canadian.
Called Awake
Conservative,
chocolate.
Called
Awake Chocolate.
Awake Chocolate. Yeah. So nice. So collegiate. What's the Canadians A. The brand didn't really work for you. The brand wouldn't have translated very well in South Africa.
SA,
Awake Chocolate. I mean, we do woke chocolate. I think that'd be good. That would work here. So you get the idea. Do they share the secrets? Do they tell you how they went about it, the science of it or not?
Not at all. We had to figure that out on our own. So at the end of the trip, Brett and I decided that we were going to do this 100% on our own and we were going to start from scratch. So we came back to SA and we tried to find a chocolatier to help us develop the chocolate. And it took us about a year and a bit to create the chocolate.
I mean, how many chocolatiers are there in South Africa? There are lots of people who are doing interesting things and sort of in the back of the home or starting out and doing really small stuff. And there's some fairly big, quite rough. there's some pretty rough artisan chocolate around. And you want something that is highly commercial, highly palatable, not that sort of specialist chocolate market, perhaps.
For sure. And I don't think there's actually enough chocolatiers. I think it's a good market to be in because in South Africa, the quality of chocolate that we produce is actually very good. And with Zang chocolate, we use 100% cocoa butter in our chocolate. There's no fat substitutes. There's no substitutes for fats because a lot of the other commercially produced chocolates, they put these in to bring down the cost.
Sure.
So we don't do any of that. That's why our chocolate is very smooth. It's rich. It's creamy. It was a matter of finding somebody who could produce the chocolate for us.
Why does it take, I mean, there are not many chocolate producers. Why did it take you a year to find the right fit?
It didn't take us a year to find the right chocolatier. It took us a year to work with that chocolatier to develop Zang. Because we had to disguise caffeine in chocolate. And
caffeine in chocolate? Does caffeine have a taste?
It's extremely bitter. Yeah. So we had to get around masking it within the chocolate. And also, you know, the recipe... initially when we started, we launched with the milk chocolate. So, we didn't have the dark at that stage. So we try to play in an interesting space where, it's not too milky, but it's not at the same time. It's quite a high, you know, percentage of cocoa butter at 45%. So,
I mean, and the thing is, I think South Africans' palates have also evolved quite a lot. In the 1990s, you could get Nestle and you could get Cadbury's, and the world has changed, and people have moved on, and taste profiles have changed as well. When you look at sales, milk versus dark, what is it, sort of 40-60 would be my assumption?
I think, you know, they're pretty much on par. However, if we look at one of our biggest listings, major retail outlets, the dark is slightly ahead of the milk chocolate, which is quite interesting because, dark is perceived. It is does have a lot less sugar, but it is perceived to be healthier than milk chocolate.
Is it?
Yes.
What does the science say?
Well, it's got a
is it healthier or less unhealthy?
It's definitely healthier. It's got a higher cacao content, and it's also got less sugar. So our bite-sized chocolates have less than a teaspoon of sugar in one of these, which is actually quite a rare thing to say for chocolate. There's less than a teaspoon of sugar in one of our Zangs.
I feel like I'm doing myself a favor.
Absolutely.
My guests this evening, Jethro Braun, you're hearing him speak, and Brett Horowitz. They are the co-founders of Zang Chocolate. Met at UCT, businessy-related courses, had a printing business while at UCT, and kind of a bit bored with it. Kind of too many people doing it. It's too many low barriers to entry. So what you do is you develop your own chocolate brand. You find somebody to make it for you so that you don't have to build the factory. You don't have to go through that level of PT. But when you do something like that, how do you protect your rights as the owners of the intellectual property? You've gone through the research, you've done the recipe, you've disguised the caffeine. What stops your manufacturer from suddenly going, you know what, guys, I think we should part ways now, and stealing the intellectual property? How do they do that? We'll find out in just a moment.
The Money Show. Shapeshifters.
Our shapeshifters this evening are in the chocolate business. Jethro Braun and Brett Horowitz are the co-founders of Zang Chocolate. You may have seen them at places like Vida Cafe, for example, where they retail them at the tills. You would have seen them perhaps in Pick and Pay. Getting distribution through a Pick and Pay is a big deal. Mm. They really are tough customers.
Yeah.
They are demanding customers. And there's also suddenly the huge pressure of, when you get that dream deal, you've got to supply enough to satisfy their demand.
Mm.
Tell me how that happened.
Well, look, I mean, the whole thing with Pick and Pay is, Pick and Pay has actually been really supportive of small businesses, and I definitely think they deserve a shout out. They've helped us launch Zang into their stores. They've got a program that helps smaller businesses get presence in stores. They help with distribution, and we've got to work personally with Suzanne and Jonathan Ackerman, and they've been really hands-on with the whole process, which I think is awesome. But that was our biggest retail listing thus far.
But it is huge. And how big were you when you got the Pick and Pay deal, and what did that do to the dynamic of what you were trying to achieve?
We had focused on getting into the independents and the coffee shops and the petrol stations, and we didn't want to rush the whole process, so we waited for a year and a half, 2 years before we decided now's the time to approach Pick and Pay for the listing. So it's definitely been a big game changer for us, and we've learned a lot in terms of retail.
How important was it to have a track record in terms of saying we're doing it through Vida, we're doing it through the likes of the Shell service stations or whatever the case might be, to go to Pick and Pay and say, here's our track record. People actually like this stuff. They buy it at the checkout.
Yeah, look, it's definitely an important factor when going to see a buyer to say, listen, these are the retail stores that we're currently in. These are our current sales. But that's not the be-all and end-all of getting listed into major retail outlets. If the guys, really like the product, if the buyer really sees something unique and something special about your product, then there's a possibility he may list you. But definitely, you need to grow your business step by step, and don't try to rush the major retail.
How do you get hold of a buyer? How do you break through that barrier? Do you keep phoning the Pick and Pay head office in Kenilworth in Cape Town and going, hello, we want to say, we want to see you, until they give up?
100%. I think that is probably the most challenging part of this business, is having to get a buyer to see your vision. Being a local small brand in South Africa, it's very, very challenging to get that initial meeting. And once you've had that initial meeting with the buyer, he could say to you, all right, cool, don't call me, I'll call you.
Yeah.
And then it's just a follow-up after follow-up after follow-up. And then
did you go through that process?
100%. Not necessarily, with Pick and Pay. I mean, Pick and Pay was very, very supportive. But with a lot of the other forecourts and some of the other retailers, it's been hugely challenging. And we've had to be consistent. And sometimes I've rocked up at buyers' offices unannounced. And unfortunately, that's what you've got to do.
And there's a fine balance, I suppose, between antagonizing somebody who actually, they just haven't got around to it yet. They're kind of busy. They've got another 30 guys who have got equally enticing product who they're busy servicing, and they'll get to you.
But, oh, no, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt that I respect buyers, and, you know, they've got a lot to deal with.
Of course you do. You respect buyers. Buyers are awesome. They're the nicest people in the world.
Absolutely. And they've got a lot to deal with. However, you just want to be able to kind of show that you're determined to get your product into the stores. And the way to do it is to consistently kind of not irritate them, but follow up every once in a while.
There's a thin line. Brett, tell me about the branding of Zhang. It's got a sort of an Aztec feel to it. It's a millennial appeal to it. The skull, it was sort of Aztec design on it. I mean, what was the thinking behind the branding of it? Did you guys come up with it?
So the brand was created by Grant Rushmere, the founder, one of the founders of Boss Iced Tea.
Yes, I know. We know, yes. Grant Rushmere, yes.
So you said it all. I mean, the skull in itself, if you look deep inside the skull, it has the brookie lace theme of South Africa. So it sort of intertwines Mexican with South African culture.
Okay, I mean, it's more Mexican than South African, but I see brookie lace. It's in there. Yeah. Zhang, where does the name come from?
And Zhang stands for kiff or cool, you know, in American street slang. You know, yeah.
Nobody said kiff on the Money Show for such a long time.
Well, there we go.
That's 1980 speak for Zhang, in case you're wondering. And in terms of market acceptance, how do you measure whether or not you're cracking the market or not?
Yeah, look, I think Zhang is really a brand for everybody. I mean, it's very occasional. So you could be on your way home from work and you're feeling a bit tired.
Feeling a bit pop.
You go past the petrol station, you go past your local retailer, you get a Zhang. You're about to climb a mountain, you're about to do a trail run. You have a Zhang to give you that energy before. So in terms of market acceptance, I think there's quite a big market. Who we found has really taken to the product the most, definitely students, young professionals. However, the product is pretty much for anybody who's looking for that pick-me-up.
What's the price point? Because it's how much does it weigh? How much chocolate do you
14 grams.
14 grams of caffeinated chocolate. This retails at
$6.99. Yeah, and then we've got the bigger 36-gram bars, which retails for $15.99.
Why 99? Sure. Even Builders Warehouse has given up on 99. You can't sell anything for 99 cents. They don't make even 5 cent coins anymore.
We sometimes don't have any decision as to what the end retailer puts the product on the shelf for in terms of pricing.
What's been the biggest obstacle in creating this business?
The biggest obstacle, I mean, there are obstacles every day that we have to overcome, really. You know, the biggest obstacle for me would probably be, you know, around my field, which is product development and getting everything in line with getting the product ready and, you know, what we're doing next. I know Jethro and I are responsible for very different parts of the business. So,
and has that been an important sort of devolution of powers and duties?
Sure. So Brett and I are pretty much on the other end of the spectrum for our personality types. And I'm responsible for more of the sales, you know, promotions, activations and distribution. Brett's responsible for the finance, admin, internal operations.
Who's in charge?
All the fun stuff.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, somebody's got to do the fun stuff.
Exactly.
You know, we're kind of Jethro, like, you know, not having any fun. But who's in charge? How do you make decisions?
So we generally discuss these things together, and then we report to a board.
Who's on your board? We have quite a few famous people on board.
We have Roy Fine, who was the initial investor. Then we have Ian and Garth Solomon. We have Rail Miller and Craig Caper, and then we have Mike Abel.
He was on the show. So I mean, you've got some pretty high profile, high power people. How do you get those people to sit on your board? Yeah, you're nobody in their life.
Yeah.
How do you get those guys to sit on your board?
Yeah, it's been a journey. We initially started the business with Ian and Garth Solomon, who've been our mentor for the past 2 years alongside Grant Rushmere. Subsequent to that, through our second round of funding, whereby we thought a key element of the what was missing in the business was marketing. And Mike and Jock and his team were able to help us with that function.
How much money have you raised? Can you tell us?
In the millions,
fair enough.
Yes.
And how do you do that? Because, yeah, again, you guys who run a printing business that, you know, that was fine when you were at varsity, you got a funky brand, but how's it going to make money? And, I mean, is that quite a sweat? I mean, was that the scariest part for you, going and asking for money?
Yeah, look, I mean, initially we, Roy Fine introduced us to Ian and Garth Solomon, and at that stage we pretty much had nothing. We had a concept and we had a demo product, but Ian, Garth and Grant really worked with us in developing the chocolate. And then after they determined themselves that it was worth the money and worth their time, they decided to invest, and we just grew from there.
In terms of understanding the process of what it is to take on an investor, to have to give a return, to have accurate financials, to not do a Steinhoff on your investors. I mean, that's high pressure stuff. You guys are what, 27, 28?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty high pressure stuff when you're dealing with millions of other people's money.
Yeah, you learn very quickly.
Have they been tough on you?
Yes, I think in the initial stages of the business, they were very tough on us. But I think we're grateful for that because we came out of UCT with not the strictest mindset, kind of, you know, we thought this could have been done with the click of our fingers, and we shortly realized that it takes a lot more than that. And I think we needed the discipline.
I guess that's also the exciting part, you know, being thrown in the deep end and, you know, learning how to swim. And that's, I mean, part of every day, waking up and thinking, what challenge am I going to have to overcome today? You know, what
is this the brand? Is Zhang milk and dark chocolate? You talked a little bit earlier about product development and getting new products. And I'm thinking hot chocolate lines. I'm thinking that sort of stuff. There are logical brand extensions and perhaps some pretty outlandish ones.
Yeah. So we are on the crux of launching our caffeinated chocolate milk.
Okay.
Which should be out sometime next month.
Oh, cool.
And then we've developed a caffeinated hot chocolate, which we're going to be launching into retail just before winter. So we're pretty excited about that. The Zhang chocolate is just the beginning of all the products that we're going to be creating.
No, it's going to look, I wish you guys luck, and it's nice that you've got a strong brand presence. You see it all over the place, and I love the startup story of it, and I love the fact that you guys have tried something else that didn't work and you didn't fall out over it. Do you fight?
We got a boxing ring in the back in the office, so when decisions need to be made,
that's the honest answer. Jethro Braun and Brett Horwitz, who are the co-founders of Zhang Chocolate, two young guys making a go of it. They've got investors, they've got some capital, they've got a board with some well-known individuals on it, and they've got a brand they plan to.
King Kong, the iconic South African